a counselor, a coach, and a spiritual director walk into a bar. What comes next is either the greatest punchline of all time or a conversational cocktail that could change your life forever. Jake, Liz, and John are offering you a unique three-way perspective on common mental, emotional, and spiritual struggles. Only you know which perspective you need the most. So grab your favorite beverage, listen in, and decide who you're gonna call.
Hello and welcome back to Who You Gonna Call. This is John Malloy, the spiritual director on our podcast, and I'm joined by Liz, the life coach, and Jacob, the therapist. Welcome back to our next episode on, whatever we're talking. How are you guys this evening?
Doing good, well. Good, how are you?
Hanging in there. So I'm interested. Jake, what's in the mug today?
It's hot chocolate.
What?
No.
I thought you were like returning to the Yingling and, you know. No?
Yeah, that was the idea. I just didn't get to the store. And I opted for something other than coffee, which hot chocolate sounded a lot better.
All right. Any particular kind of hot chocolate or is it just like generic hot chocolate?
Swiss.
Chocolate. The Swiss. What are the one that's the good brand?
The Swiss Miss. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm presuming it's the Swiss Miss.
Mm-hmm.
Does Ghirardelli have
sometimes a Margaret would make this awesome homemade hot chocolate. That's usually really good.
Yeah.
Usually. Oh, I'm telling.
That's not what I meant. I meant to say it's always really good when I have homemade hot chocolate. Usually it was in part two. Usually in the context of when I, whatever. Usually as in when I usually have hot chocolate. I don't know.
He's looking for the lifeline. So Liz, what are you drinking?
Hold on, I'm texting Margaret. No, I'm trying to make you boys proud of me. I change things up. It looks like water, but it's Pinot Grigio. So
wow, it's not even like in the cab category. No, I don't think.
No, I know. Last week I had the what's it called, Sauvignon Blanc.
Yeah.
So that was still the word was in there, but now I've broken off completely. It's white. It's totally different words.
Wow.
Very exciting.
So proud of you.
Thank you. It's a big moment for me. It was hard, but I made it.
Very nice. Well,
how
I
about
have
you, John?
Water.
Water?
Well, water, because I had a beer earlier. And actually, I needed ice cream today. I had ice cream, Bluebell ice cream with some peanut butter chocolate melted in the microwave oven, that so it becomes like its own shell thing. It was wonderful. I get headaches, John, every now and then, and so I need ice cream. So that was today.
Yes. So what you learned there for all those listening is if you have a headache, eat ice cream.
Yes, but not too much. Not too much. Just enough to enjoy.
If it doesn't work, keep eating.
And
over here, I'm coaching. Over here, I'm coaching John in my head, going like, I coach people on the word need a lot.
We'll talk after.
Need. That's interesting. You only need Jesus, John.
I should know that. I do know that. So, well, anyway, so last time we talked, we were talking about the Ignatian Rules of Discernment, the first set of 14. And we got through talking about just what's our trajectory. We talked about discomfort and two different kinds of discomfort, that which kind of helps us get towards the actual ultimate goal. And then the discomfort of knowing that we can do better in some sense. And then we talked about a little bit of consolation, that heartward, the upward surge of the heart, both on the non-spiritual and spiritual level. And so today we're going to dive into a little bit more. What do we do when we're in times of consolation, particularly spiritual consolation? So again, we're going to be using Ignatius's 14 rules of discernment. And tonight we're going to be looking at three of them. It's 10, 11, and 4. So do you guys have those in front of you? Jake, Liz?
I do.
All right. Could I call on you to read number 10 for our listeners? and it looks like, Liz, you are ready to go.
Jake's pointing at me and putting his finger on his nose, like, not me, not it, because we're 12 around here. Okay. So you said the 10th rule?
Yes, please.
I'm very good at reading. I can do this. Okay. Let him who is in consolation think how he will be in the desolation which will come after, taking new strength for then.
That's a very helpful rule, isn't it?
That's a very good rule. I like that very much.
So basically, when you're in consolation, remember how you're going to be in desolation. Mm. There's a problem with that, though, isn't there? We haven't quite discussed what desolation is. And actually, before we even do that, Jacob, last time we talked after the recording, you brought up a really good question that we were talking about the rules of discernment and how we didn't really actually talk about, at least the three of us on this podcast, what we mean by discernment. Do you want to say a little bit more about what you were thinking from that?
Yeah, I mean, when we talk about principles or rules as to follow, I imagine you wouldn't want to understand the context of what we're trying to do. So, okay, rules to follow with what? With discernment. Well, if you don't understand what discernment is, you really, in my mind, really can't understand then the rules. Because the rules are, let's say, the path to which is leading you to a certain direction. So you essentially got to know what the direction you're heading towards. And if that's discernment, then we have to understand, I imagine, what discernment actually is. And yeah, which I guess the question is, John, is discernment just a spiritual component? Or is that is there a broader definition to it rather than just using it in the spiritual context?
Yeah, yeah. So I'm going to take the leisurely route of Jacob today.
Ooh, look at that.
So I think for us as Catholics, when we hear the word discernment, and either of you can correct me, when we hear the word discernment, we're thinking of big life discernments, like vocation. Am I called to be a religious person? I mean, like with a habit or a collar. we're all called to be religious. But am I called to completely dedicate my life to God in the religious orders or priesthood? Or am I called to marriage? Or am I still struggling with that? But that's only one aspect of discernment. For discernment as it's situated here, it is, have we brought this thing before God? Are we chipping away at what is of God and where he's leading us versus where the enemy might be leading us? I just was listening to a podcast that made this distinction between discernment and like judgment or assessment that we do a lot of assessment every day. Like, should I have Neapolitan ice cream versus versus chocolate ice cream? We might judge the principles of each one, what's going to feel best on our tongue, and then make a judgment or an assessment. Neapolitan it is for today, or both. You know, maybe that's the thing. But that's not a discernment. A discernment is actually bringing it before the Lord and using these tools to see, where is the Lord calling me to find him and discover him in this particular situation. And it's not all it's not always just big moments. It might be, you know, what should I read this particular book? Should I take up this spiritual reading? Where should I go on a date with my wife? Where should I bring my kids for playtime today? There's a lot of things where we can bring them before the Lord and see, where is he inviting us to encounter him? Using these rules of discernment to help us know if it's him talking or if it's the enemy speaking.
John, can I unpack that for a moment?
Yeah.
Because I'm intrigued, because I imagine the tendency or the temptation there could be being very scrupulous. Or let's say you can go on the other end on that and say, okay, well, for every decision, such as what book to read or, you know, where to go with my kids for a play date, it's like, how do you not fall into that scrupulosity that, oh, I didn't pray about it beforehand and now this is unsanctioned.
Yeah, yeah. Sanctioned play dates.
I'm sorry, God said no.
Like, I can't meet with you today. Why? Because God said so.
I think in some of that, the help of a spiritual director helps, you know, is this kind of decision what you're called to bring before him? On the other hand, you might actually have an inkling like, I should go to this particular spot. I don't know why, but I need to do this particular thing. There's more peace. There's more something about it that is what is right and I should do. But the enemy's work is to sometimes to make us scrupulous and like hyper focus us on something. So part of the rules of discernment is to know, when is it the Lord that's speaking? And when is it the enemy trying to make himself look like the Lord, but he's really just drawing us down a path of destruction?
So just for clarification then, the specific definition of it, is do I bring it to the Lord? And if I do, that's a discernment.
Yeah. Okay. Bringing before the Lord, using the rules to help know if it's him or not.
Okay. Yep.
And you may not do that in everything. Like with ice cream, you may not do that.
I think the thing that I thought of as you were talking was it also feels like it very much needs to be in that, under that umbrella of relationship, like the same way that I would have those kinds of conversations with my husband, like, oh, well, I had this offer for this play date, but then there's also this book club thing over here, you know, like, what do you think, you know, and just kind of bringing him into it in like a, not in a, my, I have to do exactly what my husband says or else way, but just in a, I love him. He knows me. He knows what would be best for me. He's going to give me these suggestions that, you know, comply with my personality, with my strengths, with my desires, with what, with my greatest good. And he might be able to say, you know, every time you come home from that book club, you're super stressed out and the people there like seem to really drain you. Don't do the book club, do the play date. You know what I mean? Like, so it also feels like discernment is you are deepening your relationship with the Lord. You're bringing him in on what looks like a mundane part of your life, but he loves you so much. He wants to know the mundane the same way that your spouse or your best friend or your sister or whoever wants to know the mundane.
Yeah.
So
that's a great, like that. That's a great image. I love that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Very helpful. Thanks, Liz.
I think that was just like, let's, it was probably God. It's like, tell them this.
Well, and I'm sure with even our relationships, there are sometimes where our spouse is like, I don't care either way, fine.
Right. Just what do you want to do? You know, because I think there's, I think we think God has a big opinion about everything. And I don't think he does every moment of our day. I think sometimes he's just, he just wants to hear it. You know, I remember hearing a little, a very sweet little nun say one time that she was standing in the pharmacy going, Lord, which deodorant should I buy? And she's like, he's my spouse. I ask him questions. And I just really liked that, that the familiarity of it, you know?
Yeah.
It definitely challenges one's perception on the relation with God. Then, because if I see him as a judger, if I see him as a oppressor, if I see him in these other ways, then I guess you couldn't really have true discernment then, because how I'm bringing it to him would be distorted in a sense.
Yeah. It almost is a testament to how trusting our relationship or what kind of relationship we have with him. Like you thought of this relationship of spouse. I was thinking of kids. Like sometimes for young kids, they're just telling you all about the day and you've been with them the entire time of the day. So as they're telling you the story, you're like, yes, I was there with you as you experienced this. I saw that. But there's this joy and simplicity as they're telling you the joy of it. And that's in some sense how we are, how we can be with God, just saying, hey, which deodorant should I do? And he's like, I don't know. I it's really cute that you think I should tell you which deodorant you should use.
Exactly. But even, you know, I have this one memory of the other sort of the other direction of that is I was sort of called into a ministry that I was very uncomfortable with, and it had my spiritual directors okay, and it had some other friends okay, and I would make myself sick before I had to go there. Like I would just start to feel really ill. Like I really didn't want to go because it made me so uncomfortable, pull me out of my comfort zone. As soon as I was there, it was good. I'd get into a groove. I could see that it was good for me. But the moments before I had to get in the car, I would get physically, like I would feel really sick. And I remember one time, you know, my husband got used to this routine with me. And so he started to get a little like he would mess with me a little bit about it. And one day I looked at him and I was like, babe, I don't think I can go. I feel terrible. And he said, okay, if you're on your way there and you have to pull over and throw up, you may come home. And I just like died because it just called me out. Like, no, you're uncomfortable because you're stressing yourself out. Mm-hmm. And this is a good thing that you're being called to. So like, just keep pushing yourself out of your comfort zone.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's just kind of really, it was, it was helpful to have that external sort of joking attitude about like, oh, honey, yeah. you're fine.
So, but I keep coming back to this mindset though, how to not get obsessive about it, scrupulous or anxious about it, because at least if I've seen in my work as a counselor that we have what we call what, you know, codependence, you know, disorder, and there's different varieties of that. But the idea is when there's a dependency on someone else's opinion and that becomes my opinion, or the emotions becomes my emotions, or essentially I don't trust myself enough, so I'm going to go ahead and lean on someone else to tell me what to do. Now it's interesting, okay, put into God, and I'm curious too, the language we use, okay, you need to be dependent on God. Yes, to the extent that he is your source and summit. The kicker is I don't think you should treat him as a codependent partner either, to the extent that, okay, Lord, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to ask you to partake in this, but I want you to make the decision all the same. Like, it's, again, I would be very clear that discernment is not God making the decision for you. It's allowing yourself to hear what he has to say, but ultimately you making the decision and you being confident in yourself to make that decision.
Yeah.
With the informed wisdom of God. But I do find that, especially in that compulsion or that obsessive thoughts of, okay, I need to go to God with everything and everything, that there's a tendency of you're putting all the decision-making on God and not yourself.
What's coming to mind as you were talking was I've known people who, as they're doing the big vocational discernments, they're so afraid of taking any steps because it's the wrong steps. And not seeing that they're looking to see where is God inviting them to take a step. Not that taking the wrong one is like, oh man, now you're going to hell. Cause you know, I created this path over here, but you joined your merit. Well, like there's a yeah, that scrupulosity, that overemphasis in there's, I feel like I'm going to trip down a heretical path here, but like that we don't have particular free will maybe, or that our free will is not important, that there's not a, that there's not a, collaboration with God, rather that he has created us for something. He's inviting us to something. We're asking him where that is, but he still also respects the choice we make and will draw the best out of us, whatever the choice is. And so discernment is really bringing before the Lord in a non scrupulous way. Lord, where are you calling me? What are you asking of me? I want to do your will. But I know that I am the one that is, I'm wanting to unite my will to yours.
I think for me, as I'm, as you're talking, what strikes me is that I do struggle with scrupulosity. And I think in those moments, a good spiritual director never tells you what to do. They help you see how to figure out the next step for yourself. So I've always felt that I've actually gotten very frustrated with my spiritual director for not just telling me what to do, because I would like to be codependent and let somebody else run my life. It would be very comfortable for me. But he won't. And I think that the beauty of that relationship is that he asks me questions that lead me down a path that help me make my own decision. And it's such a gift. And I think that that's something that kind of, it's a both and, right? Because we don't want codependence, but we are made for relationship. And we do, you know, that whole male and female, he created them. There is a complementarity in the human race with each other. And it helps to, I was re-listening to some of my training today, and my coaches were talking about how helpful it can be to have somebody else help you while you're looking at your mind, you know, to kind of look at it with you and maybe see things that you didn't see or help you understand, like, yeah, this is you, these are your strengths, these are your gifts, keep going, you know? And I think that's what a good spiritual director does, is that in these moments of discernment, they're helping you look at your soul and the strengths that God gave you and your natural inclinations and go, hey, you're not alone. You don't have to feel unsafe, but you are okay to make your own decision here, you know?
Yeah. So it's interesting. And I want to make this transition to the wolves then, because it's interesting. We're pivoting it to spiritual direction or in the context of the spiritual realm, which is true. And I think that's important. But Liz, to your point, having someone there to look inwards with you. And I've actually experienced that quite a lot with counseling, that there's a form of relationship there. There's a rapport. There's a trust. And that many clients will come to me and ask ask about, Jake, what I should do, but saying, hey, I have a dilemma. I have to make a decision. And can you help? And now sometimes there is more like, hey, what do I do? Knowing that I can't make a decision for them, I can make observations. And it's interesting because I'll make an observation about this or that or the other thing. And just to see the lights go on, it's like, oh my gosh, I didn't see it that way before. Or like, oh my gosh, I didn't think about that, you know? And then we talk about the significance of it. Like, okay, yeah, you're noticing that there's no, you know, connection there about that friendship or relationship, whatever the case may be. Like, what does that mean to you? You know, like, how does that line up with your values? How does that line up with your, let's say, relationship with God, your relationship with yourself? And then, you know, go ahead and make your decision. So it's interesting how I see a lot of discernment even in counseling, and how as my role is to just support that decision by just making observations and being there to help them iron things out with regard to the values. And it's interesting because, and so we'll kind of, and I'm going to throw this out to you guys, but it's amazing, especially with young men that I've seen, some college students who are like, Jake, I think I should go to become a priest. Okay, and we talk a little bit more. I really like this girl over here. And it's like, okay, so why do you want to become a priest? Because I think I should. And so it's interesting because when we talk about discernment, it can't be a should. You know, it has to be a free choice. And something in my own personal life, or let's say my own journey of discernment of priesthood and married life, that it wasn't true and wasn't real until I actually put both vocations on the table. So I think there is a certain level of freedom that needs to be. There's a certain level of an invitation rather than a have to or a must. And for certainly a confidence in that you have to still make the decision. You have to activate your free will. Right. You can't depend on, and I don't like the words, so it's not to say don't depend on God. It's God will be there in the decision, but you got to make the decision.
Right.
Yeah. God's on the other side of either door. You know, as long as you're not choosing something downright immoral.
Right.
Yeah. God is there and he's going to work with that decision no matter what. You're not, in that sense, you almost can't make a bad decision if you're choosing between two goods, because God's going to be there either way. Because I would argue that there are young men that seemed to want to be priests because they didn't know how to talk to girls. And I was like, oh, honey, she's going to be in the confessional waiting with her deepest, darkest secrets that she doesn't even tell her husband. You better know how to talk to women.
So two things as we pivot into the rules or back into the rules. One is just the need for that accompaniment from someone else, whether it is in the spiritual realm, whether it is in the goal setting and accomplishment realm, or whether it is in the healing realm. We need the help of someone else to help us navigate whatever that is. I think it's Chris Fenwick that says, your mind is like a bad neighborhood. Don't go in alone. So when we're doing these questions or just sorting out things, we need someone else to say, no, here's what I've heard you say before, or here's where the left turn is, or I've been down this road before. And the rules of discernment from St. Ignatius help equip those who are doing the guiding to know what's the neighborhood look like. So that's why I feel like these are so important. And I would say in each of our professions, there are some kind of rules and training that you've gone through to help you navigate or help help you guide someone else as they navigate the decisions they're making. So that's mm-hmm. where these, I think, are really helpful. And there's corollaries between your both of your professions.
Love it.
So then going back into the rules, Liz, thanks for reading it. Let him who's in consolation think how he will be in desolation, which will come after taking new strength for then. So we're talking about consolation. So as a reminder for our listeners, consolation, spiritual consolation, is that surge of the heart towards God. It is that the heart is being lifted up and being drawn closer to God. It's the experience of being very close to him. Sometimes it is preceded by a non-spiritual consolation, beauty of a sunset, sunrise, the mountaintop, the beach, whatever the case may be. But ultimately, it is only coming from God himself. So this rule kind of depends on, this 10th rule kind of depends on us knowing what desolation is. So that means we have to go back a few rules to the 4th rule, where Ignatius talks about what exactly is desolation. So Jake, would you mind reading that out for us?
You got the long one.
So that's the 4th?
The 4th one, yeah.
Yep. Of spiritual desolation. I call desolation all the contrary of the 3rd rule, such as darkness of the soul, disturbance in it, movement to things low and earthly, the unquieted of different agitations and temptations, moving to one of confidence, without hope, without love, when one finds oneself all lazy, tepid?
Mm-hmm. Tepid.
Yeah, tepid. Okay. Sad, and as if separated from his creator and Lord. Because as consolation is contrary to desolation, in the same way the thoughts which come from consolation are contrary to the thoughts which come from desolation.
So just overall, desolation, happy place or sad place?
So sad.
So sad. So heavy, depressing.
Very heavy.
Very heavy, hmm. Yeah. The complete opposite of consolation. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting how Ignatius just puts these two things together. He identifies his, or he calls his terms, here's consolation, here's desolation. Desolation mm-hmm. being those that heaviness of heart as it relates to the Lord. So in both of your professions, do you have something like this where there is a, like an area of yuckiness that you help people with?
I was giddy reading this rule because of the very last line, because as consolation is contrary to desolation, in the same way the thoughts which come from consolation are contrary to the thoughts which come from desolation. Thought work is my jam. I mean, that's what I do as a mindset coach. And I was like, yes, this is so much about what we talk about with the trajectory of your thoughts. Like, you know, this thought, this negative thought, again, I work with primarily with married Catholic women, and these thoughts that you're having about your spouse or about your children or whatever, where are they leading you? What's the trajectory? And it's like, if it's a negative thought, the emotion is negative, the actions are mm-hmm. negative, the way you feel about yourself afterwards is negative. It's all crummy. It's all very crummy. Mm-hmm. And then when we start to work through, you know, we go through the whole negative thought and then we come up with a thought mm-hmm. that is more positive, that is more hopeful. And you see the trajectory change, that the mm-hmm. consolation is there. And, you know, one of the big questions I ask is, did anything shift for you while we were talking? And they'll say, you know, or is the original emotion as heavy as it was? And they say, no, mm-hmm. it's a lot lighter. It's still there, but it's lighter. You know, so it's this recognition that like we're on a path to healing. We're on mm-hmm. a better trajectory now. So I got really excited because I was like, that work is my thing. I love this.
Yeah. let me ask you guys something. And John, particularly to the context of spiritual desolation, because obviously this is in the spiritual realm. Mm-hmm. Let's go ahead and say that I send you a client, John, for spiritual mm-hmm. direction. Mm-hmm. And you and that client come to the conclusion that he's in spiritual desolation. Mm-hmm. I would imagine that it would correlate to maybe his current experience of what he's seen me about. That mm-hmm. if I'm in spiritual desolation, that's going to have an emotional and physical impact. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if that's an accurate assessment mm-hmm. to that possibility, And the reason I say that, and I'll set it up in this way, because I actually talked about this something similar to in class the other day, where if you think about a triangle, if you look at a triangle, mm-hmm. right? So those listeners out there, think of a triangle. In every lived experience, you have thoughts, behaviors, and emotions. Mm-hmm. Okay, so petting a dog to experiencing a severe trauma to an argument with your spouse. You're going to have thoughts, you're going to have emotions, you're going to have behaviors that respond from that particular experience. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then you imagine that triangle within a larger triangle of the human person, right? The mind, body, and soul. That when I experience something in my spiritual realm, the spiritual, okay, an encounter with God, an encounter, you know, let's say at a supernova conference or an adoration or even my scripture, I lecture Divina and I read something and something comes to me, that you're going to experience an emotion, you're going to experience the thought, and that yeah. might lead you to a particular behavior. Yep. Either you go to the body, same thing. It's going to... So I guess what I'm asking is, when we talk about spiritual constellation,
or
would
desolation.
It be an...
Desolation. Okay.
Yeah. Spiritual desolation. Would it be an accurate assessment then that that's going to then actually impact you on a physical and a psychological, emotional level?
Mm-hmm. That is one of the areas where we would start looking at. So okay. If a directee was saying, you know, they're describing spiritual desolation, you know, I'm just not feeling like doing prayer. I'm feeling heavy about stuff. You know, that commitment I made to prayer or to some whatever came out of prayer, I don't really feel like doing. We would name it, well, it sounds like desolation. And then we'd dive into, okay, so when did this start to happen?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit about when you started noticing this. And sometimes that will be related to the physical, the human situation. Okay. Oh, baby hasn't been sleeping, so I haven't been sleeping well. I've been exercising. I've been traveling. Like, there are human things that degrade us and bring us to a desolation on a human level, huh. which then can lead into an experience of spiritual desolation. So if that is the case, then we would start looking at, okay, well, if desolation came from you just being tired and sore, let's talk about how we counter desolation, which is a different rule. It's rule 6.
It's very body soul composite.
Yeah,
it really is.
It's like if I haven't slept, you know, and I'm hungry, mm-hmm. then clearly God doesn't love me.
Right. Well, but meanwhile, you're just hangry. Have a bite to eat and then see how you feel about God.
No,
God loves me so much.
Yeah.
That's interesting. John, it's interesting. You articulated, I don't know. I'm just kind of blown away by that, because it's so integratable, right? Mm-hmm. So it's, and honestly, I think one thing that maybe as all listeners are hearing this is like, well, geez, if simply lack of sleep is going to let me, mm-hmm. it's going to lead me to depression, and then it's going to lead me to this spiritual desolation over here that would be, you know, take time to get myself out of there. Mm-hmm. And then there's a composite of all these different things I need to get doing so I don't go down these holes. Mm-hmm. It's almost like, if everything leads to everything else, if all they all impact one another, it's like almost like impossible to not to A, not be depressed all the time, or, you know, to not be anxious all the time, or even just to not be in spiritual desolation all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm wondering how, but the reason I'm kind of expressing this is because you articulated, John, how you work with your directees, okay, what's impacting you. And how you said it can lead to spiritual desolation. So this mm-hmm. idea of, hey, watch out, you're not sleeping, that can lead to some things. And if you're not aware of it, you're going to get there.
Yeah. Well, I think we know this from non-spiritual realm too. When you're tired and cranky, how do you interact and make decisions? Mm-hmm. Are you the mm-hmm. best version of yourself to be able to mm-hmm. interact and talk with people? Mm-hmm. Usually not, at least that's my experience. When I'm
yeah.
hangry, and that's why there's a word, hangry, right?
Yeah.
I don't interact with people very well. when I'm tired and haven't done a lot of sleep, I can't make really good decisions. I'll go back to the kind of worst version of myself and act out of that. So in this time of spiritual desolation, it's somewhat like that. If I'm tired, I am spiritually going to feel the enemy speaking and tempting me away from things and feel like God doesn't love me or he is very far from me.
Yeah. So then the question then is, if you try to reverse that then, and this again, this is something that I mentioned in class, was if you're going to work on one area, you got to be working on the other areas as well. Mm-hmm. Like unilaterally, you got to be working on these different fronts because of how they impact negatively. So therefore, if you're trying to work on one to positively impact, you got to do it on all sides.
Mm-hmm. And actually, that is a rule of St. Ignatius, actually. It's the sixth rule. So perhaps we should shift into the sixth rule on when you're in desolation, what should you do? So actually, why don't we read that and then we can continue that conversation just so it's contextualized with that. So the sixth rule is, although in desolation we ought not to change our first resolutions, it is very helpful intensely to change ourselves against the same desolation as by insisting more on prayer, meditation, and on much examination, and by giving ourselves more scope in some suitable way of doing penance. In other words, we need to fight against the desolation. Mm. So if it's, I really don't feel like praying on the spiritual side, you pray an extra minute than what you committed to.
Huh? Yeah.
It's like saying to the enemy, you're not the boss of me.
I do love what God wants me to.
But as I'm saying this, I'm wondering for each of your areas, if someone is not, acting out of a good spot in your coaching or in your therapy, what's your advice to them? How do you guide them through their not being the best version of themselves at that moment as they're talking with you about things?
I answered the last question, Jake. Do you want to go? Because I have an answer, but if you want to go, you can.
Yeah. So it depends on the resolve to change. Now there's this whole diagram of different stages of change. So I'm not gonna go into that, but I will definitely assess. Do you want this behavior to change? Now it's interesting because when I work with clients, let's say with addictions or particular behaviors that you just can't will it away in a particular way, you have to structure different components that need to be in place, and so it takes time and more structure. Okay, all that to say is, like, do you want this gone? Now if they don't, or if they're like, I don't see a problem with it. Okay. I'm not going to tell you that you should change. So what we call it's motivation interviewing, which is simply conversion with them to help them identify their values and how the values may be in contrast or contrary to their behaviors. Where it's, you want a good relationship with your wife, but it's like the typical, on one hand, you want a relationship with your wife, a good relationship with your wife. On the other hand, you drink till you're drunk every night. Mm. You know, how do you make sense of that? Or stuff like those kind of questions that pivot the behavior, the negative behavior against the values and help them formulate, actually, I do want to change. Mm-hmm. It's tricky though, because immediately I want to go in and fix it. Immediately I want to be like, you know what? You shouldn't be doing that. And not only you shouldn't be doing that, but you're coming to me, you don't see a problem with it, and you're going to keep doing it. And I know there are actually heavy consequences to those behaviors. Mm. And I can't in the context of, I'm not going to tell you, hey, by the way, here's what's going to, I guess in one sense I could, and I think there's, obviously not in the sense of duty to warn, like, okay, if you're going to harm yourself, we need to talk about that. But there's a certain level of, like, you're not stupid. We both know what the end results could be.
Yeah.
And I got to let you choose your free will on this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I can't take that home with me. I have to let go home and be like, that's not on me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's hard. That's hard as a counselor, but that's something that needs to be evaluated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Wow. Mm-hmm. Liz, what were you going to say about it?
Well, I was thinking, you know, although in desolation we ought not to change our first resolutions, most of the time people come to me because they want to improve their marriage. Mm. But a lot of the time what they're bringing me is my spouse does X, Y, Z. And so to improve my marriage, I need him to stop doing this, you know, and we have to go back to that first resolution of the resolution was you wanted to improve your marriage. Mm.
Interesting. And
that can only be done from your perspective within yourself. Mm. We can't change him. Yeah. He didn't come for coaching. So it can be it's painful because I don't want to tell them that, you know, I don't want to be like, sorry, we're not changing him. I'm sorry. Like we're changing. If you want to change anything, you get to change you. Like, and that's super freeing and super beautiful and super exciting because there is a plethora of things that can improve in your marriage just by you changing, including understanding him more, inviting him to talk more and explain himself more to the point where he may start to change. Because he feels seen and loved and heard and accepted. Mm-mm. But we have to go back to that first resolution of you want a better marriage, not you want a different spouse. And again, it's hard to kind of bring that back because, you know, people will bring me scenarios of, well, this is what happened. And they can be very painful scenarios where like my heart is really, you know, being tugged at and I'm feeling like it's so heavy and it's painful and it's sad and I want to fix it. Yeah. But what I can do is tell you, hey, here's what you've been thinking. Can you see how that's not helpful? Can we find something else that's more helpful? How do you want to feel about this? If he came into the room and did the thing right now, how do you want to feel about it? Right now you're feeling this. How do you want to feel? Yeah. And how can we work towards you feeling that way? So bringing back from that, you know, hitting it even harder and being like, no, I can single-handedly change my marriage from right here.
Yeah.
Not from over there with him. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
So
it's kind of a double down. I'm hearing from both of you, there's like a double down getting back to why did you start this particular thing in the first place? Up? Let's really stand firm in that. Mm-hmm. Let's not be wishy-washy because the feeling is different than when we started off on this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's an interesting thing too, because it's going back to your goals, resolutions, you know, if anything, which is interesting because if I'm starting off with, okay, you know, I'm seeing you and you're telling me you're having this difficulty and this behavior you don't want to change, but you had a resolution in the beginning to want to work on yourself. Let's come back. And if you don't have a resolution helping you find one, let's say motivation. Yeah. The interesting thing is like then going back to like rule 10 that, okay, if you flip it to where I'm in a constellation, knowing that there's always going to be difficulty ahead, there's this idea that like we said, double down on your resolution. You know, it's almost as if your resolution doesn't change. It's just am I keep coming back? Am I coming back to it? Whether I'm in desolation or constellation? And it's interesting because when it comes to the what to do in desolation and in the context of the counseling world and psychology, it's like, okay, yeah, low energy, you have no motivation, and you feel like you don't want to do this, you feel like, okay, a lot of things. It doesn't necessarily matter. What matters is the act of the will to commit to the and it's something that just kind of struck me earlier today even, this idea of, it's not about performance. It's not even about success in the sense of I achieved holiness or I achieved this, that. It's like I committed yet again to my resolution. That recommitment, that metanoia, that reconversion, I would say is the building of sanctity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's the showing up. Mm-hmm. It's the showing up to the resolution that you committed to in a time where you were clearly, when you had a clarity of mind. Whereas when you're in desolation, whether it's spiritual or non-spiritual, there's kind of a fog around your decision-making process. On the spiritual side, it's Satan that has fogged it. But when you're tired, you're not going to make the best decisions necessarily.
Which is interesting why the resolutions have to be habits. And it's interesting because there's a behavior component to it that if you just stay in the cognitive world of, and not just cognitive, but like in the clouds of like, oh, I'm going to love Jesus today. Bullcrap. Right. If you don't know what that looks like, if you don't actually participate in habits that are consistent, you're not going to do that. You're not going to make that decision.
Yeah. And that's the beauty of that 10th rule that we were talking about. And then I know, Liz, you've tried to talk twice.
No, it's okay. Carry on.
But that 10th rule is when you're in consolation, when you're feeling the love, so to speak, and actually very, you know, tangibly, think about how you're going to be when desolation hits. And I love how it says when desolation hits, because you are going to get hit with desolation. Mm. You're going to experience this absence of God, this sadness, this heaviness. When you get there, and Jacob and Liz, both of you have mentioned this in your own realms, equipping them to the clients or directees, how are you going to be when it doesn't feel good anymore? Mm. So that's where this 10th rule is. Okay, when you're in consolation, think, how am I going to act when desolation comes? How am I storing up the treasures of this feeling good so that when desolation comes, I am well armored, I am ready to go, and I have a plan of action when it doesn't feel good no more. And Liz, you were talking.
No, it's making me think of, well, to go purely girl realm on this, and it's okay because you're both married. It's making me think of when I was in business coaching for a while for my business, and my coach would tell us to plan our month's work based on where we were in our cycles and plan it ahead of time. And so that when you hit the times of your cycle where your energy was lower and you were tired and in pain potentially, that here are the easy jobs I'm going to accomplish so I can still push the needle forward, but I'm not going to push myself too hard. I'm not going to set myself crazy goals during the time where I'm at my lowest and then have all of the high energy jobs for when I'm at my highest energy. Right. And it even makes me think of parenting that, you know, the time to try to decide on a consequence for your child's behavior is not when they just did the behavior.
Amen.
It was way before that. It was way before that. You should have sat down and been like, okay, here are the common problems that come up with this child. I have decided that these are the consequences that are going to come out of my mouth when the child does that. So in the moment, you stay calm and you're peaceful because you have a plan and you know that you can control the consequences versus when you're standing there and you're infuriated and your brain is going 1,000 miles an hour and you can't think of a single thing that is a legitimate consequence and you make a fool of yourself in front of your, I mean, I have small children, but there are moments where I'm like, well, I was an idiot. I looked so like I had no idea what I was doing. You know, so it's just when you're in that consolation. My spiritual director used to tell me this, you learn to trust God when you don't feel like you need to trust him, when you're at peace and everything feels safe and you practice trusting him then so that when the bad times come, when you really need to trust him, you can go, wait, I remember how I did this. And I'm going to do it now.
You know, it makes me think of, and I do this a lot, actually, this particular exercise. So a lot of times with clients who want to build on setting boundaries, people pleasers, anxiety prone. People, I'm like, okay, that's I can relate to that. That to set up, okay, let's go ahead and set boundaries is, and it's interesting, and I do this kind of assessment that people pleasers or people who are prone to anxiety will not get angry. Why? The kicker is that particular emotions have, let's say, themes. So anger in particular is a theme is related to an injustice. So for something to have an injustice would presume then that there's a value that's being broken or being violated, okay? There's a value that's being violated, therefore there's injustice. So to allow myself to get angry at someone else because they violate my boundaries or my value is to assume that I have value, therefore I'll get angry. But when I choose not to get angry or when I choose to justify the behavior or I choose to take responsibility for the emotions, what's happening is you're essentially telling yourself, I don't have a value worth standing up for. Okay. The interesting thing with that, though, is how I, okay, well, we need to start building that up. That rather than just talking about assertive skills, we need to actually go back to kind of the basics of how do you see yourself? And it's interesting because usually I kind of bring in the here and now of counseling. And I said, okay, What allows you to cry in here? What allows you to be open in here? What allows you to be honest? What allows you to be vulnerable? And they immediately go to, well, I know that you're not going to say this or that. And a lot of times it's because you're my therapist. You have to. And I'm like, no. I'm here because I want to.
You're paid to be nice to me.
You know, right. You're like my paid friend. It's like, okay. It's, like, it's more than that, but I get where you're coming from. All that to say, though, it's not necessarily a me thing, right? Mm-hmm. Therapy is a mirror. Okay, mm-hmm. Therapy is a mirror. So anything that you do with therapy is a choice that you're actively willing to participate in. And therefore, if I'm allowing myself to validate my emotions, to validate my value, what you're doing is you're actually partaking in seeing yourself as valuable. It's a mirror. I look mm-hmm. at the mirror and I say, you are good. Mm-hmm. So the idea then is when I send them home for homework, I tell them, look in the mirror and repeat these positive, truthful statements about you, because it's not about let's go into the hardish, let's send you out and fight everyone you cross. Actually, it's the opposite. Let's actually have you meditate and contemplate your value, mm-hmm. have an experience of that encounter more consistently by God, others, and yourself. And that actually formulates that foundation that when you enter into that conflict, when you enter into that desolation of sense, that foundation is secure. Mm-hmm. And you can therefore advocate, you can therefore validate, you can therefore live to that fullest authentic self.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. As you were talking about that, I was thinking of even... again, another rule. I'm just full of rules today. Ignatius' rules, but that the next rule, the 11th, he kind of contrasts when you're in one, do the other. So when you're in consolation, when you're being consoled, just remember that you're going to be in desolation and how, in some sense, how pitiful you are, how useless, how weak you are in time of desolation. Mm-hmm. So when you're experiencing consolation, remember, be humble, because in desolation you were not anything. But on the contrary, when you're in desolation, remember how much grace was sufficient for you and drawing on that richness. And so as Jacob, as you were talking about that, that like building a foundation with the values, that's what I was thinking of. It's like, you're building up. Here's the rally point for when you hit, you hit that point, you're building that up. And for spiritual realm, that's the same thing. When we're in consolation, here are all the times when God showed up, when God was close, so that when I hit desolation, it is, but God hasn't abandoned me. Here are all the times, here are all the proofs that God does not abandon me. He loves me. Mm-hmm. He is close to me, even when I don't feel him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In coaching, I think of that as like the moment at the beginning of coaching calls when I ask them if they had any wins this week. And we talk about their wins.
Awesome.
And sometimes it even goes on past that, where they'll be talking about something completely different and I'll start jotting it down and I'm like, that's another win. Like you didn't see it as a win, but that's a huge win. Like you didn't, you know, you applied everything that you had, had resolved upon and you did it really well. And you're seeing that, oh, well, it could have been better. No. Still a win. We moved forward. That was awesome. You know? Yeah. So I think it's so important because then again, you know, in the wins, I know for myself, just at a personal level, that if I make it to an extra mass or if I work out one day, I can start patting myself on the back in such a big way. Like, look at me. I'm better than like half the people I know because I did this thing. And it's like, I was laughing to myself the one day because I could feel the pride and the vanity building up inside of me. And I felt like I heard God say, one time, you did it one time. It was good. And I'm very glad you're here, but it was one time, sweetheart.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it just brought me down. Like, oh yeah, I'm not St. Therese yet.
Yeah.
I feel like spouses are good for some of that too. Like
mine isn't, he's pure affirmation all the time. He's like, you're so good.
But sometimes that's good for when we're in the depths of despair too, to hear them say, well, actually the pits of despair you're in, well, remember those times when you weren't the lies you're saying to yourself.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm a bad fill in the blank. Well, no, actually, here are the proofs, and you're hearing it verbally, of how you are not the worst of what you're saying you are now, the lies.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But it brings me to mind, too, this idea that when I encounter that, okay, consistency. I always look for consistency. Mm-hmm. How do I know healing is happening when
yep.
there's consistency? Okay. The kicker is when my particular clients achieve like a victory, I'm like, let's positively reinforce that those behaviors and thoughts and emotions mm-hmm. and go treat yourself. And mm-hmm. oh my gosh, it's hilarious. I remember one client telling me, Jake, I went out and I got myself my nails done. Another client went out, I was like, Jake, I bought myself a dress. Another client mm-hmm. was, I went out and
yep.
got a beer with my buddies and I do invite, like, tell your friends, like, mm-hmm. this is the shepherd going to find the sheep. Like, yes. let's celebrate.
Yeah. yeah.
But once we finally kind of found that rhythm of, okay, let's reinforce those truths, apply them to, you know, different situations, and you come through that, you find there's a consistent rhythm now.
Yeah.
That any desolation that comes or any issues that come up, it's okay. Let's go back to the template. What have you been learning? How do we keep moving forward? And, you know, you talked about this idea of, you know, once we're doing really well, is I actually, and, you know, we talked about this once before about this, like, search and destroy. Like, I actually would recommend, okay, let's actually not wait for desolation. Maybe that's, the language is loose, but there, but like, okay, let's use this momentum. Let's actually go out and conquer. Don't get comfortable.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that we can achieve that growth. Let's not wait for it to come out. Let's go after it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to where those you don't want to go but use what we've been using. So I'll be willing to bet, like, and I'm curious for you guys in the context of the spiritual realm too, John, is like, can you actually be able to, like, you know what? Let's go to those places I don't want to go, knowing that that's going to actually bring me desolation.
Mm-hmm. If they're in consolation, yes. If it's the Lord that's inviting at that particular point.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But if they're in desolation, that's not the time to make any kind of change whatsoever. That's the time to double down on the resolutions. That's the time to really stay steady with what was the conviction was in time of consolation. And that's the most important rule, is fifth rule, is like, when in desolation, don't make a change. Just don't do it. Just don't do it. So if someone were to be in consolation and they're top of the world and they're feeling closeness of God, that'd be the time for me to say, okay, is God inviting you to anything or to re-examine something?
As you're saying,
gotcha. Let's see what that is. But if they're like, you know, I feel so distant from God and maybe I need to, you know, whip myself or, you know, whatever the like drastic thing is, like, no. Let's just go back to the simple thing that you decided to do before you experienced all this desolation. Keep to that. And then mm-hmm. when the closeness of God returns, then we'll talk about that whipping thing.
Yeah.
Don't recommend, by the way, anyone just putting that out there.
But, you know, it makes me think of it at a very just material, normal human level. It makes me think of my husband and I talking early on in our marriage where we decided we couldn't make decisions for our family in January and February.
Hmm.
Cool. Because of seasonal depression, man. It's like, it's dark and you're sad and you want green and you're like, probably we should move. It's like, calm down. Everyone just breathe.
You know? It's like the people in snow going, I need to move to Florida now.
Exactly. They all made that decision in February, yeah. all of them.
Yep.
It's dark and gloomy and I'm sad.
Yeah. Well, it looks like we're coming to the close of our time already. So I guess just to recap, we started off talking about consolation and what we're supposed to do in times of consolation. But in order to do that, we had to visit desolation, what it is, that heaviness of heart, as it in the spiritual realm pertains to God, but there's also just the regular, like, ickiness.
The pits of despair.
The pits of despair. Nobody.
It's a surprise.
Bunch of geeks.
Jake is so ashamed of us.
I'm the cool one.
Mr. Quoting, you know, Star Wars before this started, right. Whatever.
It's just not on the podcast. Yet.
Jake just hides his nerdiness.
But when we're in those pits of despair, to not make a change, to rather double down, to recognize that God is still with us. And then when we're in those good times, those times of consolation, to prepare for the time of desolation, to be built up, to really draw on the treasures that we've built up, to build them up and then draw on the treasures when we're in desolation. feel like we've missed anything. I feel like we've kind of gone all over the map, but in really good ways.
Okay. It's been so fun.
We took the scenic route.
We did. We took the scenic route.
We did. Jake inspired us. It's getting into our psyches.
Yeah. So next time we'll see where the Holy Spirit takes us, but we'll talk more about how do we deal with desolation, consolation, but also just in the mental health realm, in the goal setting realm, how do we work with when we're in these pits of despair and these mountaintop experiences? Because I think Ignatius' rules, while they're in the spiritual realm, there are corollaries in both the mental health with therapy and the goal and mindsets. So I'd love to continue talking about what to do with all of that from our each perspectives. So
very exciting.
Thank you all for joining us once again for Who You Gonna Call, and we'll catch you on the next episode. See ya.
Bye.
Bye.